This rip of TFTC was brought to you by River. It's the best place to buy Bitcoin. Go to river.com/TFTC and enjoy this episode.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Yeah, we're starting off with a riff. Thursdays, making Thursdays your busiest day makes Friday a little bit better. This is what I've learned. Wasn't intentional.
There's nothing I love more than an open Friday. Especially in New York. Walking around on a Friday in New York, can you beat that? That's always fun.
I feel like it never works out that way for me. I always hope for Friday to be my relaxing day, and what inevitably ends up happening is things just pile up at the end of the week and I'm like, oh crap, I can't do anything but work.
Yeah,
that happens a lot.
It's not to say that doesn't happen to me either, but without fail, and I've known this because we have Rabbit Hole Recap on Thursdays, do another podcast on Thursdays sometime, now this Thursday, mixing in a TFTC episode. I just know going into the week, all right, gonna make it to and get through Thursday, and then Friday will be that much better.
My jam is I have a calendar that I just called block, and sometimes I just have to physically block out the entire day so nobody books anything. It's the only way to ensure that I have an open day to myself. Yeah, it works pretty well.
But speaking of Fridays in New York, I had one a few weeks
ago. Oh yeah,
during the halving. Was in New York for the halving.
I was too, but I missed it. I thought it was around this other event that I had to do, and I somehow missed that it happened that Friday night. I thought it was happening Saturday, so I thought I was gonna miss it anyway. So then I just stopped paying attention, I guess. And then I saw everybody having fun Friday night and realized I totally blew the whole thing.
It was a fun event.
I'm here at the pub. Yeah, I'm here for pizza day though. Here, that's gonna be fun.
When is that?
It's gonna be in a few days, right?
Yeah, I think it's next week, maybe sometime, 22nd, somewhere in there. Yeah. There's a cool Nostra thing happening there too at old Pub Key on the 30th. Lots of action.
Yeah, lots of action. I was able to visit one of my favorite dive bars. It's one of my favorite dive bars. It's got a good playlist. Automatic Slims.
Ooh, where's that at? Oh, West Village. I love West Village.
Yeah.
I like WXOU. They have a cool jukebox too. Have you been there?
That is one of my favorite bars.
Nice. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
West Village doesn't get a lot of love for some reason. I feel like a lot of my friends think I'm a dork for liking the West Village, but I like it. I think it's great.
WXOU bar was top three bars for me in New York.
Yeah, that place rules. It's cash only. There's a sign on the back that says cash only, no Red Bull. I love that about it.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I just think it's funny. And just print it out on a piece of white paper.
You get the wooden booths. If you get there earlier enough, you get
the
booths. It's a good time.
Yeah, right by the window too. Good people watching down Hudson. Yeah. It's a great spot.
I mean, before we jump into what we came here to talk about, which is Ticketbot, which is incredibly cool. What are our thoughts on this Kendrick Drake beef?
I'm team Kendrick on the way. Like, there's no doubt about it.
I haven't been following it that closely, but I've always been a huge KDOT fan. So
I have as well.
I would have to take his side over Drake by default.
I've never seen Drake. I've seen Kendrick in 2013, I believe. Good Kid, Mad City at a festival. One of the best live performances I've ever seen.
I bet.
Yeah. I mean, there's just no. It's Kendrick. That's it. Drake's a poser. I don't know. That's my personal stance, but
yeah. And
I'm a huge Little Brother fan. Do you guys know that hip hop group? They're out of North Carolina.
No.
So there's it's a duo. They used to perform with Ninth Wonder, but he kind of fell out. So now it's two guys Fonte and Big Poo. And it's starting to come out of the woodwork that Drake has essentially ripped off his entire delivery and flow off of Fonte.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Soulja Boy first, Fonte now.
Yeah, and
this
checks out.
This whole beef started because of some other rapper that Drake ripped off as well. Right.
Yeah. Who was it? I forget who it was. Yeah, Drake's been ripping people, and he's stealing people's girlfriends and stuff. Like that's his move. When I started
teenagers
digging into
girlfriends.
Yeah. He's been going into DMs. This dude, we got to get rid of Drake. He's done. Drake can move on to something else. And
well, the reason I bring it up to start this conversation, how could something like Wavelake, Noster, Value for Value disrupt the rap beef, the beef and rap market?
Zaps could be the true voting signal, right? For who wins.
Yeah, like
beef.
When you go to a coffee shop and there's two jars and it's like Drake or Kendrick, you could do that. You could do that on Wavelake. That could be a little hackathon, Michael. We'll just build like a digital tip jar thing.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that is.
We just got to get those two guys involved.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see if we can get Kendrick on Wavelake. Probably won't be a problem.
We've got some people connected. We can reach out to them. Hey, K-Dot, if you're listening. No, that is in the somewhat serious, I'm like getting on, like it is like a rough consensus around who won the rap battle. It wasn't really a rap battle, but the beef, yeah. The back and forth, if you will, multiple songs. The consensus was highly dictated by Twitter commentary and YouTube. Yeah. Channels that were essentially dissecting everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the end, both of them won because everyone's talking about them.
It's true. I thought for a second, I was like, is there some way that this is fabricated, you know, but then there's not. The more you dig down, I didn't get too deep, but one day on an airplane, I'm like, okay, I'm going to catch up on all this stuff and figure out what's going on and listen to all these songs in consecutive order. And yeah, there was no question that it's absolutely real. And this goes deep. And people, yeah, I mean, I think people seem to have always kind of been annoyed by Drake, but he was, I guess, kind of good. And so people were putting up with it just because the music at a point was okay. And now the music sucks. I mean, I've never been a fan, but you know, some people liked him, but now the music just straight up sucks. So he has no pass. He's done.
Yeah.
I always assumed that the whole rap battle thing was always a publicity driven thing, hasn't it? Like, I get that there are some, you know,
going all the way back to Who Shot You.
But that was a way to get attention, right?
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, diving in and like plugging Wavelake into this, what you guys are trying to do, it did acutely highlight is how insular the music industry is and how much influence is dependent on influence or proximity to influence is dependent on your overall success. And I think that's what was laid bare in this back and forth, particularly coming from Kendrick.
Yeah. I really liked how fast it happened too. It was just happening in real time, unfolding day after day. It's just really cool that can happen today. That you can just release, you know, record and release music so unbelievably quickly. I feel like a couple were even released in the same day, like within hours of each other. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I think the Graham Family Matters or whatever.
Yeah.
To be honest, I only listened to two of the songs. And I posted about one on Twitter and got yelled at for like, oh, why are you listening to those? There's better things to do. And I was like, all right, I'm sorry.
You listen to music every once in a while, Marty. Yeah. You're allowed to.
I was watching UFC and I saw Kendrick posted. I listened to the one song. I was like, oh, this is pretty good.
Yeah. I love it. I love listening. I mean, it's like I have sort of a short attention span for lyrics often because my brain just automatically goes more towards the instrumentation of things, but I really focus on Kendrick's lyrics when he's talking. The dude, I watch a bunch of I forget who it is. There's like this guy that does breakdown videos of primarily like rap and hip hop lyrics. and always pointing out just how unbelievably smart and clever the Kendrick lyrics are. It's pretty fascinating.
Like, he gets into talking about like the cadence of his raps and the bars and the alliteration, and the particular words he uses. It gets like mathematical.
It gets incredibly mathematical, and like, yeah, lots of callbacks within verses and stuff. And they're just, you know, yeah, really smart stuff. Dude's super smart.
And Good Kid, Mad City came out when I was in college. So, very memorable album for me. And I think that's one of the best American biopics that's ever been written, in an album form, just how he described life in Compton. And it was a story throughout, very creative way to piece together an album.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great love. One. That was the first love one you. For me. I love that one.
This episode was presented by River. River is the best, most secure place to buy Bitcoin in the United States. Go to river.com/TFTC, set up an account today. You'll be able to DCA into Bitcoin without paying any fees. You'll be able to give people Bitcoin via River links. You'll be able to send and receive Bitcoin over the Lightning Network. And you'll be able to set limit orders. If you want to buy Bitcoin at a particular price below or above where it is now, you can set orders to buy Bitcoin when it hits that price. Go to river.com/TFTC and set up your account today. This trip was also brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Unchained is building a financial services platform for a Bitcoin standard. They have over 7,000 clients that are securing over 90,000 Bitcoin with 12,000 keys on their platform. Their platform leverages Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. Their cornerstone product is their vault product, a 2 or 3 multi-sig vault, which allows you to hold 2 of 3 keys in a multi-sig quorum. That gives you full control over your Bitcoin. They also have an IRA product, a lending desk, and they're rolling out a bunch of other products, including an inheritance protocol and sound advisory. So go to unchained.com, set up a call with their concierge onboarding team today, tell them that TFTC sent you, and use the promo code TFTC at checkout. Unchained.com.
I love music. I love music of all kinds. It's just so cool. Music is such a bonding thing, isn't it? Isn't it cool to come on this isn't a Bitcoin podcast anymore. You talk about all kinds of stuff, but it's cool to just be able to connect with people on music. That's the most fun part about it.
Yeah. That's the, my wife and I went out to, with a bunch of other Bitcoiners last Friday night to an album release party for a smaller artist here in Austin. It was just a really cool experience going to, God, what the heck? Small venue all the way down South Congress. There's probably about like 150 people there, and the artist Scott played his album. It was just really cool to be in that environment. It was like a honky tonk bar.
That's fine.
An artist releasing his album, $20 to get in the door, drinking ranch waters, listening to good music that's not mainstream. It's a good.
I feel like the album listening party is coming back. I've been noticing that a lot. I mean, maybe it didn't completely go away, but that was a thing a while ago. And now I feel like it kind of fell off the map for a while, but I've been seeing a lot of that.
So this was just to listen to the album. It wasn't a live performance.
No, it was a live performance of the album.
Seeing these, like, you just go like, what's that band? You ever get into MGMT?
Oh yes. I've been on a big MGMT kick.
Okay, cool.
Little Dark Age Radio has been my go-to radio station.
I love that band, but they did a whole run of just like, you just go and listen to their record at a record store and hang out, and they had some fun stuff. It was really cool. Yeah. I think they even did some at movie theaters, and I just think it's a cool idea. You know,
that was
get together and listen.
Yeah, that was how I heard Radiohead's Kid A for the first time. I was in college in Madison, and there's a beautiful old theater called the Orpheum, and it was like a record listening party, and people just sat in the theater basically in the dark with a looping video on the screen, and like all heard Kid A for the first time, which was really weird, like the first time you heard it. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me it was like, what, this is the band that, you know, was singing Creep a few years before, and now they were doing like weird avant-garde prog rock. But that was a really cool experience.
I just flashed back to the first time I heard that. I was standing outside of someone's car, and they're my friend's car, and they're like, you have to hear this weird ass Radiohead album. It's like, what is this?
Well, I'm having flashbacks to driving in the car with my dad in Philadelphia growing up when like Creep originally dropped in the 90s, and he he was young. He was in his 20s at the time. We were in the car, but that guitar riff, that like he would get all, he'd like turn the radio all the way up and get jacked up for that. He was like, wait for it.
And it was so cool when you could listen to the real one too, but not the radio edit, because it was a little little grittier.
More explicit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little more explicit.
By the way, one of Patrice O'Neill's best, it wasn't even a joke. He was on a radio show talking about Creep. Oh, it's just like the epitome of like white people hating themselves.
That's amazing.
Music, man.
All right.
It's powerful.
It is. It really is.
It's incredible. Yeah, Sam and I have gotten into some deep conversations about bands and stuff in our couple of years of working together now. And it works out because, you know, we're trying to build this music service. So inevitably we end up geeking out about this kind of stuff.
Well, it's like that story I just told about my dad in the car. I have many songs where I can have flashback memories of time with my dad in the car, just because music, I'm able to connect that moment with the song that was playing at that particular point in time. Like, there's literally something psychological about that.
Yeah. That's where music started for me, was riding in the car with my dad, like road trips, buying cassette tapes and stuff, driving to, we had family that lived in Oklahoma. So my dad and I would just drive there for a couple of days. And, you know, it's like a 16 or 18 hour drive or something from Arizona. And, that's like a little listening party for yourself. You used to actually just like listen to an album, you know, that's an art form that's being lost, but it was so fun to just sit there and discover like the Beatles and the Beach Boys and all kinds of cool, you know, my dad's music, but now it's mine. Now I love it. But yeah, it is cool how much of an impact, those early years of your life, you really do remember. Like I can almost see it, you know, like close your eyes for a second. You can just picture driving through the desert, listening to like Joan Baez or something.
Yeah, we had the albums in the car, The Who's Greatest Hits, Supertramp's Greatest Hits, Soundgarden, Black Hole Sun.
Wow. Diverse.
What else did we used to get into? Pete Yorn.
Pete Yorn. Love Pete Yorn. Jersey. Michael, were we just talking about Pete Yorn not that long ago? Or is that someone else?
We have before, yeah, but not recently.
I have a great Pete Yorn story. I saw Pete Yorn live at the House of Blues in Atlantic City before it went under. I was 16. I was a massive Pete Yorn fan at the time and had the opportunity to meet him, and I completely just muffed it. I was like 16, so nervous. Like, oh, hey, what's up?
Hey, Pete.
Yeah. That's cool.
I worked at a hot dog stand at the Jersey Shore, and that was one of the albums that I would put on. Like when I got the aux cord, I'd be like, all right, we're putting Pete Yorn on.
Yeah, that reminds me. I worked as a lifeguard through like the second half of high school and first half of college. So naturally, like we're listening to stuff on the speakers during our shifts, and the guards that were a couple years older than me were all into Jimmy Buffett. Like they were huge.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, for sure. Had never been exposed to any, like, you know, any of that Margaritaville type stuff. And man, that stuff is, those songs are seared into my memory from sitting on a guard chair for like weeks on end through the summer, listening to Jimmy Buffett.
I don't know if there's a better place to listen to Jimmy Buffett than on a lifeguard chair. That's kind
it kind of made sense.
Yeah.
last summer, I feel like there was some cosmic intervention into my family's life around Jimmy Buffett. As we listen, we go to the shore, back to the shore from Texas to Jersey in the summers, and my wife's parents are gracious enough to let us use one of their cars, and it didn't have an aux cord or anything, so we're forced to listen to Sirius Radio, and that was our radio station of the summer, was Margaritaville. And
nice.
We listened to it all summer, and then literally right after Labor Day, he kicked the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that video, the tribute. Have you seen the tribute? They did like a tribute concert, you know, kind of in honor of him after he passed away. And there's just like a video of Paul McCartney on stage with a margarita, and he's just like hammered beyond belief, just sort of like timing, walking in and out of like to the microphone. And I think he's standing next to Woody Harrelson, and Woody looks over at him like, dude, what is Paul McCartney wasted right next to
Paul McCartney blacked out next to me?
Yeah. Incredible. He's just doing his like Paul McCartney groove. You know, it's pretty funny. You gotta go find it.
That's actually, we're going to get to the content of it. Now I'm just telling music stories. Another live music memory for me, Firefly, I think it was 2014 or 15. When I saw Kendrick first, that was Firefly 2013. And that was an incredible experience because one of my good friends at college, she worked for the event company that actually threw the festival. And so we got VIP passes. It was like the first experience with this festival was VIP backstage. And then I went back the next year and my friend did not get us access to these tickets, but on, I think
it's tough going, it's tough going back to that real world after you've had VIP experience.
Yeah, exactly. And I had that embedded in my brain. So the Friday night, the first night of the festival, the next year that I went, I remember that experience and knew I didn't have the wristband, but as soon as I saw my opportunity where there was a security guard not guarding the VIP section, I grabbed one of my friends, darted back there, and we were able to successfully remain incognito in the VIP section the whole day, which ended with me like semi-blacked out side stage with Paul McCartney.
That's amazing. Yeah, I always tell people, just you just walk with intent, walk with confidence. Do that. You're good.
Meant to be there. You're meant to be there.
Even better, buy a case of water, guaranteed. You walk past the security guard with a case of water, look, man, I got water. He's just like, go. This guy's got water. He's fine. It works every time. Yeah. Man, yeah. I've finagled my way into many shows just doing that. Just walk
with a case of water.
No, not with a case of water, but you can literally just walk through. You realize that like most of those security guards just really don't care.
They truly don't care.
Yeah. Like they don't want it. No one wants to be confrontational.
You'll find
the guy that does, but
maybe I have a thrill of sneaking into places, but another great concert. September 2009, Blink-182 at the Susquehanna Bank Center in Camden, New Jersey. Thought I bought a fake ticket from a scalper.
Oh no.
Got denied. And then quickly just like walked 50 yards back and then just like walked in.
Nice.
As people were flooding in. That was a great concert. Weezer opened for them.
Dang. Yeah. The first two concerts that I like went to with my friends, like by myself without any parents, it was, I think it was Weezer on the Pinkerton tour, which is my favorite album. Mm. So that just like locked that into place for me for the rest of my life. And then I saw Blink 182 on the Dude Ranch tour.
Oh shit.
Yeah. I'm that old. So yeah, it was pretty great.
Yeah. This was, I think this was like the first, one of their first concerts back from, one of the times that Tom went AWOL and,
yeah, they had already broken up and got back together, but
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This was like pre-Travis Barker, Blink-182. I think they still
had right. He wasn't Scott. Their original drummer.
No.
That's right.
Well,
well, I want to hear more about this scalped ticket.
Oh, yeah. Segue. Yeah, how'd you get scammed? That's so weird. I've never heard of that happening before.
Yeah, when you're 18 and drinking underage and the parking lots of Camden, New Jersey, there's many people who are looking to take advantage of you. Saying, yeah, hey, I got a ticket for you to get into the concert. And you hand over some cash and they give you a fake ticket. And you get to the door and they're like, this ticket's fake. And then you have to improvise, turn around, and then just bum rush the entrance.
In hindsight, how bad of a ticket, like how bad did it look, the ticket
I mean, at
itself?
That point, like this was 2009. So that was when you were literally printing out like a piece of paper with a QR code.
Yeah, you didn't have an Apple wallet.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty legit.
I mean, if we got time for one more bad music story, when I was like 16, my friends and I, there was like a Arizona Republic was the it still is the main kind of newspaper in Arizona. And we made some fake press passes that said we were working for like the teen section of the Arizona Republic. And we just went to Kinko's and laminated them. But to make them more legit, we cut out the hologram from a baseball card and just stuck it on the back. And it worked. We got it. Like we got into like two festivals. We got into Rage Against the Machine and U2. And then the very last time we used them, it was at another Rage Against the Machine, and Foo Fighters were opening up, and we were getting real ballsy.
Foo Fighters was opening for Rage?
Yeah. And we were getting really like cocky with it because it worked so well. And so we went for a sound check, and we were sitting in this amphitheater. We were the only three people just sitting on the stage watching Foo Fighters sound check. And at the end of the sound check, this security guard came and got us, and he was like, "You guys got to come with me." And he brought us backstage, and Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine was standing there, and he's like, "What are you guys doing?" And we're like, "We're with the Arizona Republic teen whatever." And he's like, "No, you're not. What are these?" He's like, "What are these passes?" Like, did you guys make
a Topps hologram?
No, he was like, "Is this from like a hockey card or something?" We're like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Get out of here." And he's like, "Do you guys need tickets?" And we're like, "Yes." And he gave us tickets. He put us on the guest list. But he's like, "That's, you guys so gotta cool. Get out of here. Don't come back until tonight." But it was super cool because, yeah, we thought we were like dead meat, and then he was actually really cool.
Tom Morello, called out by Tom Morello.
I mean, we were raging at the machine. What's he going to do? Like, we're, yeah. You know.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
Like, we're young punks. We're going to break in. We want to see you guys play. What are you going to do about it?
I don't want to assume any thoughts on the current state of Tom Morello, but it is pretty interesting. Rage Against the Machine has, I think it's become a story of a die hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah, you never know. You never know how things end up with as people get older, maybe some things change. I haven't kept up with Tom Morello though. I'm not really sure.
I mean, my dad was a massive Chris Cornell fan. So his time at Audioslave.
Yeah.
Listened a lot of Audioslave as well.
I never saw that band, but that was like the bass player from Rage was in that, or the bass player and the drummer from Rage were in that band too, right?
I thought Tom Morello was, yeah.
Oh, was it Tom Morello? I can't. They had so many side bands. What was that? There was that Tom Morello band too with like Chuck D or something. Wasn't there like a Public Enemy crossover?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Is that a,
I can't remember it though.
Did I make that up in a fever dream or something? Yeah, I don't know, there's something like that.
No, that sounds right. It totally sounds right, but I can't remember it.
I gotta make sure I'm putting out good information here.
Yeah, that sounds accurate. I know there was a band at least where a couple of the dudes from Rage were in Audioslave. I feel like at least that bass player for sure. The guy that, oh, never mind.
Yeah, he was in Audioslave. All right, good.
Okay. Good fact checking, Marty.
Checks out.
Sorry, it's hard when you start telling stories because you can go down many rabbit holes, many different types of shows, festival shows.
Yeah.
Huge stadium shows.
Yeah.
Theater shows.
Could talk for hours about this stuff.
Sam's got like touring stories too. He's gone on the road and I've heard a couple of those. They're pretty
fun. Dog. We do our waveform podcast and sometimes it's like, what are we going to talk about? We try to, and then we just end up, you know, talking about whatever. And then an hour goes by and it's like, oh, I guess we can just talk endlessly and bore people about music. Or last week, I think we talked about Toast for 20 minutes. I don't know how that happened.
That was my fault.
That's what I had a good buddy, one of my best friends from college. He was in a pop punk band, Knuckle Puck. He was actually the replacement.
I remember that band.
Yeah, he was their replacement bassist, and they went on tour. And apparently they were massive in Japan, so they went on like a Japan tour. And
that's
stories
the dream.
From that. One of my best Knuckle Puck stories when they came to New York when I was living there, they played at Webster Hall. It was the only and first time I've done a stage dive, which was at the Knuckle Puck show.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I've never done a stage dive, but in my old age, I've been wanting to. I've been going to these shows with my kid. And they're like, you know, punk, pretty rowdy punk shows. And I'm just like, I'm feel like I need to while I still can. I haven't done a stage dive yet. I feel like I still have a window of time where I can embarrass my daughter and stage dive at the same time. Really fun. But I haven't done it yet. How'd it feel?
Did
they catch you?
They caught me.
It wasn't a drop.
I mean, you know, pop punk band, I mean, audiences.
Yeah.
They're down there to mosh and to
every once in a while you see a kid kind of jump off and people just weren't paying attention. You'd hear like a, ooh, in the crowd music. And you'd hope you'd see a head pop up and make it out all right. But
yeah. No, I mean, I think Knucklepuck is a great example of like a small band that had like a very good, like under the radar success, was able to tour, make some money. But all their money was made like touring and doing things like that. I don't know how much they've made from Spotify over the years.
Yeah. You used to be able to make money touring even in a small, that's the era I grew up was I worked at a punk venue where there were still $5 shows and you could pay the bands, you know, a few hundred bucks and that would get them to the next town. No problem. And they'd come home at the end of the tour and they have enough money to get them through to the next one. Maybe they worked at a coffee shop or something too, but it was still totally manageable. Now that's almost impossible. You know, you really have to, well, first of all, you can't even, I mean, a lot of those bands would just book their own shows. It was pretty easy to just, there was a book that just had every single small venue. It was like book your own life or something. Maybe there's another word in there too, but it was just easy. You could just call, you know, there are like 10 places in Texas and you just would do your own routing and you could book your own show. And it was really fun. That was my first tour. We did that. We got on with a few of our friends' shows. We played Austin. The first show I think I played in Texas was at Emo's. And it was just like calling them up and, you know, people used to let you do that. There's probably some places still can, but like so many of these venues now are owned by bigger corporations and they don't allow you to do that anymore. You know, you have to come in on a package or something.
What are the types of corporations? Is it like Ticketmaster or?
Like Live Nation. Like in Phoenix, Live Nation bought up most of the small venues there. So there's a couple. I mean, you can play bars and stuff, but you know, it just, I don't think there's the same network of independent venues that used to exist. There's still some, I mean, there's Neva. There are some, you know, but I don't know, even that. I mean, like also openers, like the venue that I worked at, even if it was a package deal, you know, like a 3-band tour, they would allow openers and stuff or regional openers. And so you could call in and just get on a bigger show, like Lagwagon's coming through. You have two open spots. We'll get someone from this band from New Mexico that's been calling us for 2 weeks. And then this band from down the street. It's kind of sad that I don't think that happens as much as it used to either.
Quick break here, freaks. This rip is brought to you by Gradually Then Suddenly, a framework for understanding Bitcoin as money by Parker Lewis. I wrote the foreword to the book. I'm honored to have done so because it's the best 0-to-1 primer if you're looking for a logical explanation of why Bitcoin obsoletes all other money. Buy one for yourself and maybe a few for your friends. Go to thesafehouse.com/gradually. That's thesafehouse.com, safe spelled SAIF, thesafehouse.com/gradually. Use the promo code TFTC for $5 off at checkout. Buy it now, freaks. The price of Bitcoin is going up. You need to understand it. This is the best 0-to-1 primer. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that currency runs on are a risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores, connect your wallets or custodial accounts, and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC, $40 off.
And I'm not checking my text here. I'm looking at the ticketing service I used to go to this show last Friday, Dice. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh yeah. I actually kind of like Dice. I've brought that up a couple times I think when in sort of the concept of this thing we just did, because it's sort of a similar vibe. I've used Dice out here in New York a couple times. They use it for this record store Rough Trade has a lot of events and they use it. It's pretty cool. It's not bad.
Yeah. So let's dive into that. I mean, that's a perfect segue. Not that you didn't provide a perfect segue earlier, Michael, with the, what was your fake ticket looking like, but let's describe like, looks like Live Nation is coming in and boxing out the ability for smaller bands to actually get out there and get in front of people. And then you have the competitors like Dice that are offering services. And then you guys just launched Ticketbot. So let's first describe the problem that is entering the market via Live Nation. How people are trying to compete with it now, like Dice, and then what you guys are doing.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, I would say it, the monopoly of Live Nation and other ticketing agencies like that probably spans even beyond just small artists. It probably affects large artists too, but in different ways. So like in the case of Taylor Swift, we, you know, all heard the stories about fans not being able to get tickets because scalpers were buying up all the seats and then going to the secondary market and selling them at exorbitant prices. But yeah, in terms of like smaller acts, you know, like Sam was saying, there are no options if you don't go through one of these larger ticketing brokers, because they own a lot of the venues and they own the box office and they own the website and they own the secondary market, where all the transactions happen. So yeah, I think, you know, Ticketbot is a kind of small, modest step by us to try and like reimagine what ticketing could look like using the technologies that we have, like Lightning and Noster.
Yeah.
Yeah. This has been like I reference this every once in a while, but this video just keeps popping up. It's like a video of Kurt Cobain in probably 94 or 95 or something. And I think he was on MTV and someone tells him, I always forget what the show is, but he's talking about how someone's like, can you believe the tickets for that show are $50? And he's just like flabbergasted. He's like, what? Who would ever charge $50 for a concert ticket? And now like for some shows, especially, you know, higher priced tickets, fees can exceed $50, which is totally, totally nuts. And Michael referenced the secondary market. To me, I feel like that's the where these ticket companies are getting in, probably going to get in the most trouble, is that they're buying the companies that are the secondary markets for their tickets. So, you know, there's even some question. I feel like some
double dipping
places have been busted on double dipping. And that's one of the oldest tricks in the books for venues. Like venues used to do that. They would have scalper tickets, promoters. It was like a promoter trick. You know, the promoter would buy 100 tickets and then scalp them out in the parking lot and not tell the band. And, you know, that's where that idea kind of originated from, I would say. But it's pretty messed up when, like, I was telling Michael the other day, my daughter wanted to go see this band play, and it was just a theater show. It's not, you know, it's like, I'm sure it should have sold out. But the ticket on the resale market was like $36. It was a cheap ticket to begin with, but the fees were $20 on a $36 ticket. And that's because it was, you're paying the premium, you're paying for the resale so that the ticket reseller made some money and the person reselling it made the money. So in some cases it could have even been triple dipping. Like if you think about it, like if they're selling the tickets, they could hold tickets, get fees on that, get fees on the second. I don't know. It's just crazy. Like I think it's the whole thing is getting so convoluted at this point. No one even knows what to do. People just, we're talking about like a decade old problem. It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And the price of tickets are going up. And so that allows the fees to get even more absurd. Cause if a ticket's now $250 or sometimes, you know, you're going to like a Taylor Swift show or something, it's like $2,000 or more.
Yeah.
then it's not that weird if the fee's $150, you know, because it's a $2,000 ticket. But if you really stop and think about it, that's actually totally nuts.
Well, like shifting this like a Bitcoin or adversarial thinking systems mindset, is this essentially, is the core of this problem like Sybil attacks in terms of like bots just being able to Sybil a ticket sale as soon as it's live, acquire them, or not even bots, maybe it's the ticketing companies themselves doing this?
I mean, that might be one. Yeah, that's probably one avenue of attack where it could be bots. It could be, I mean, there could be just, you know, scalper farms where they just have a bunch of people with like 90 browser tabs open and they're just waiting to pounce to get the first run of tickets. But yeah, I think it, like I was saying, I think it goes a lot deeper than just an issue where, you know, there are people out there just trying to make a quick buck by buying a ticket and then turning around and selling it at a higher price. I think, you know, I think it's like every step of the process is now owned and operated by, you know, a large entity, a single entity. And it seems like the prices of tickets keep going up at their benefit, at that company's benefit, but you know, everyone who's putting together the show, you know, from the band to the crew to the venue, you know, and the fans, like they're all losing out and not seeing any benefit from those higher prices. So I think it's ripe for change. I don't know how that changes. I know there's some legislation being, you know, moving through Congress that is trying to regulate the market a little bit more, but yeah, we'll see. I mean, I saw like at the latest White House Correspondents' Dinner that Live Nation had a bunch of napkins that they had printed for all the journalists and the politicians that were at the event. It basically, you know, kind of making the case for Live Nation being a good company. So it's difficult to see how the legal political approach really improves the situation when you have a company like that that just has, you know, financial ammunition to basically make the rules as they see fit. But yeah, I think most consumers and artists are aware of this problem. So like now that like it's blatantly obvious that that there's something wrong, it seems like people are open to looking for alternatives to try and make it better.
Yeah, it's almost poetic. It's like quite literally a gatekeeping problem where you have a company really putting a gate between the audience, the venue, the artist, and charging like a toll, an obscene toll to get into the experience. And it's, again, just like thinking about the whole experience, the audience connecting with the artist and the venue, creating an environment for the artist. And you have something that should be mundane, the ticket to get you access to that experience, actually controlling the whole thing.
Yeah, and there's other elements too. I mean, there's a huge this is nothing new, but like merch cuts within the shows. That was a thing typically that started. I mean, that started because just bigger venues. I mean, merch wasn't always a thing. You could get a T-shirt at like a Led Zeppelin concert or something, but it wasn't an industry like it is now. So a lot of bands didn't have merch sellers or merch infrastructure, and a lot of the merchandise was licensed and being manufactured by other companies. So in the early days, like if there was a bigger band and they would get to a big venue and they would need to sell merch, the venue would sell, they'd have a staffer and the venue would sell their merch and they'd take a cut of it. And then over time, they're like, oh, we can, you know, make some money here. And that was fine, I guess, for the venue. I always sort of rebelled against that. And any deal I ever had with a venue, we just had a pretty strict rule of like, we won't play a venue if there's a merch cut. But it's gotten so bad now. I mean, talk about double dipping and triple dipping. Live Nation owns the venue. They own the company that's promoting the show. So they're getting the promoter cut, they're getting the venue cut, they're getting the rent, and they're getting, you know, parking. And then they're taking upwards of like sometimes 30 to 35% of the merch cut as well, which is like, that's the lifeline for most artists, especially small artists. So, I mean, think about like a small band, you know, opening on a tour that's opening up for a bigger act. They're also having to give those large merch cuts to the venues, and, you know, they're following in a van, they're following a bus tour in a van, and having to do these long drives and, you know, keep up with everything. And if you're ultimately taking that away from them too, I mean, that's like, it's more like a lot of people just think it's the tickets, but it's like, it's so much more, you know. There's just all these layers. It's always every single time the band that ends up getting screwed. Like they've dreamed up all these different ways to make money, and in every single situation the band makes less money,
and the fan pays more.
It's I mean, it's genius. People keep getting away with this stuff, I guess, but I don't, you know, hopefully the tides turn here at some point in time. Cause I think at least hopefully people are starting to wake up to all this stuff. Cause it is just total insanity.
You mentioned Taylor Swift earlier. I've seen Shane Gillis, the comedian, complain about this and like have to come out and apologize to his fan base. Like, hey, there's nothing I can do. I don't know what's happening. We're releasing the tickets. Somebody's buying them. Like, sorry, they're so expensive.
Yeah. And people are doing, like, Maggie Rogers is doing like physical ticket outlets for her tour this summer, I think.
There's actually a billboard on my way into work.
Popping up. And it's cool. I mean, it's cool to see somebody sort of like trying, you know, people have over the years. Like, I remember like Pearl Jam were huge advocates against Ticketmaster back in the day when things really kind of got rowdy in the 90s and probably even through the 2000s with them. They're probably still fighting that battle. But it is cool to see when people are taking some sort of unique approach to how things work, you know, or like, talk about Paul McCartney.
Is that how Fish did it? I went to a couple of their shows with their Baker's Dozen tour Baker Dozen's residence at Madison Square Garden. And I know you needed the physical donut ticket to get in.
Mm. Yeah. I'm not sure if that went. Some bands do that. I think Paul McCartney even runs his own. Someone's got to fact check me on this someday, but I feel like Paul McCartney's MPL Productions, I think he runs his own ticketing as well, which is kind of cool. It's like, he's big enough, so he just rents the arenas as it's like, he's the production company, which is a really cool way to combat that, you know, but not everybody can do that, obviously, but there are ways to get around it. It just like everything else, it just kind of sucks that you have to do that, you know?
Yeah. And so, I mean, diving back to Ticketbot, I know you guys are making small steps and thinking about solving this problem. I think you guys made it pretty clear that, hey, we're releasing this product for some shows that are going to be happening around, or for a specific show happening around the Bitcoin conference in Nashville. And you were very clear, like, we're just testing this out, what's going on. So you guys have released something. You're communicating to the market that we're trying to solve this problem and using the Lightning Network and Noster. Bear with us as we try to solve this. So what is the MVP that you released? And how do you think you guys can begin chopping away to solve this massive problem that's really ruining the experience for both the audience and the artist at the end of the day?
Yeah. So I think it sort of starts with the basic concept for Noster, which is everyone has this portable identity. You have your NPub, and you can use it on any client, you can use it on any app, and you don't need to be locked into any kind of particular garden. And so we built the Wavelake mobile app, which is just a music listening app and an app where you can zap any of the artists that you like. We built that in a way so that essentially the zaps become a signal for the artist and your friends. It becomes a kind of signal to show who you're into, what music you're into, what artists you're supporting. And we're able to link that for the artists as well to essentially say, like, here are the, you know, the top 10 people who are zapping your songs, for example. So that's something that we're still developing in terms of making music, sharing, discovery, and zapping more of a social experience. But it kind of goes nicely into this problem of how do you get tickets for concerts to actual fans of artists? And one of the ways we think we could do that is to use that social data on what people are zapping to then essentially create a kind of filter. If an artist wanted to, say, sell the first 100 tickets to their concert to their top 100 supporters, an artist could do that with something like Ticketbot, where essentially would just lock out sales to anyone except those 100 identities. And then once, you know, some amount of time passed or those tickets sold out, then you could open up, you know, the next batch to another group of listeners and so on. So the way we designed the Ticketbot tool was to try and just make it as Noster native as possible. So it is just a calendar event that we stuck a fee on. We just put, you know, the price of the ticket on the calendar Noster event. It's just one sat, I think, is the minimum. And it essentially, if you zap that note, that calendar note, our Ticketbot agent sees it, issues the zap request to the user, or the payment request to the user that's zapping the note. And then if the user pays the zap request, pays the payment request for the zap, then we give them a ticket and it goes to their DMs. You can see it in any of the Noster clients that support DMs. And that ticket is attached to their NPub. So while right now you can only really RSVP to this Nashville event through the Wavelake app, because we just built the integration for this. Theoretically, any client could support it by just allowing a user to see the event and then zap it if they wanted to RSVP.
Yeah. And to be clear, because it wasn't clear to me when I was buying, but the one sat, quote unquote, price for this particular event is just, you could set different prices if you wanted to, right?
Yeah, we went back and forth on what to do there for this event, because there's the argument that was made of, you know, we should make it like 1,000 sats or 10,000 sats or something. But that's in the value for value world. And it's like, do you set a suggestion? If you set a suggestion, will most people psychologically just go with the suggestion? Or if you have if we had something so low, like one sat, maybe people would understand that, it's not just one, you know, that you could just put in whatever. But if it was still confusing, we probably need to update the description there. But yeah, the idea is just
the, well, confusing, like, so I did 10,000 sets.
Yeah, awesome.
I did one set, or I might have done more than that, but I know I did at least 10,000. But I'm thinking like the technical mechanics, like, for the ticketing issuance, like, does it need to be one set and then you're asked to do more as a value for value model? Or can you literally just set a price and be like, here, if you do this, we'll mechanically give you a ticket?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, for this event, we just set a minimum of one set. So if you zap at least one, you can get a ticket. But you could also, you could set any sort of minimum and not issue the ticket unless the zap is for that amount.
Yeah. You could have an actual ticket price. And I mean, Michael was talking about something the other day that I thought was cool, that I didn't even really think would be possible, but it made sense as soon as he started saying it. It's like, even on a resale, market. I mean, this is getting like way further down the road, but since that is assigned over Nostr to each identity and it's issued by one, I'm probably going to be botch describing this, but you could even set like the max amount that a ticket could be sold for. So if there were to be a resale market, you could say like, hey, this is a $20 ticket or whatever the equivalent is in sats. But if you resell it, you can only resell it up to 5% above the face value. Or going in a layer even deeper, you could resell it. If you resell it for more than 5% above the face value, then it has to get split back with the original issuer so that whoever created the ticket to begin with went back to them. So that's like way next level stuff, you know, but that blew my mind when you started talking about that. I was like, oh my God, this is
holy shit.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, some of this was inspired by, a lot of the, some of the eCash implementations that are out there for mints and federated mints. You know, the way I understand a lot of those to operate is, the mint issues you like a token and that's sort of equivalent to some amount of sats or it's 1-to-1. But ultimately that mint is like the centralized authority on those tokens for that particular mint. I think these tickets could operate in a really similar way in that, you know, whoever's issuing the ticket is sort of the central authority for that particular ticket. But people are able to interact with the issuer of the ticket in different ways. So, you know, not only can you just buy a ticket and then the issuer gives you a ticket in exchange for that, but if you wanted to sell that ticket to someone else, like Sam was saying, the issuer of the ticket could actually burn your old ticket and then issue the new ticket to the person you're selling to and tie it all together using your identity. And then also, you know, on top of that, create rules like you can only sell it for 10% above face value. And then because, you know, the idea is we want to be working with artists on this, we could say like, yeah, if you sell this for 10% over face value, like the artist gets 90% of that, you know, that increase, for example. Things like that, I think. There are a lot of possibilities. And it's exciting.
The other thing that's cool too is the idea of creating a split on the ticket itself. So at the, you know, you're not even having to wait for that. Like the split could be issued to everyone involved. The promoter can get the 15%. The artist could get their cut. The venue could get their cut. I mean, everything could be split in real time, just like we're doing with music. There's really no difference.
Yeah. And
you just would have to set up the infrastructure for it.
Well, that's what I was just going to get at. And to think about like trying to do this via Live Nation, not that they would, but just running through the hypothetical, like for that split to be possible, you'd have to have the venue set up an account that's connected, like a traditional fiat bank account or Stripe account, whatever it may be, connect it, do all that. But with this implementation, it's literally just spin up a Nostr private public key pair.
Yeah.
Attach a Lightning address to it and then put your MPUB in and you're in.
Yeah. It's going to be on the venues. I think, I mean, there are other people that are way more qualified to talk about this than I am, but you know, like in my experience briefly as a promoter and selling tickets through e-commerce for punk shows and stuff, the venue ultimately decides what ticket company they want to use. And a lot of them will sign these deals for very little money just for like an advance. You know, I don't know how much things have changed in the last 10 years, but I remember talking to a friend when I was just trying to put together, a friend of mine wanted to start promoting punk shows again. And I was like, I'll help you. And we can sell the tickets on Hello, my other company. And just like, I'll just do simple PDF tickets and we can figure it out. And I started asking my friends who own venues in Phoenix. And it, yeah, you know, it was like, well, we're, this sounds really cool. It'd be so awesome to be able to just control our tickets like this. And, but we can't, cause we signed a 5-year deal for, you know, $5,000 and like a website or something. It's like what you get out of it. But this just, I mean, just like the merch problem in with touring and ticketing with venues and most other problems is it's going to take action. People are going to have to actually do this. And the bright side here is that there are plenty of event sites, you know, there's Eventbrite, there's Meetup and things like that where anyone can just issue a ticket. That's not like the, it's not that that's the problem. It's just, there's no feature out there that, is solving it. So it's like, it's just a necessary thing. It's like, well, we may as well just use Ticketweb or Ticketmaster or whatever, because it's just where everybody goes. It's what everybody knows. And none of these other things are really solving any problems, and they're not really helping us out in any way. So we're just going to use them. But, just like with the music stuff, like it's going to, you know, people are going to continue to use Spotify. They're going to continue to use traditional platforms and things like that. But some people won't. Some people will start to discover Wavelake and some of these other concepts. And when those things start working for them, I think it'll start a trickle effect that other people will see and other people will take action and just start to decide like, hey, maybe this is the better path to take. Like, we don't have to do this necessarily. And I think in order for Ticketbot to work or something like this really to work, venues are going to have to get on board with it, you know, and hopefully they're able to, you know, that, I mean, there's always going to be independent venues. And if some of them take a stance and just decide not to use these bigger ticket companies, they'll have a better option. Cause in the past there have been other options. Like there have been a friend of mine had a ticket company that was really cool and very fair, but then it just got bought, you know, but that's what ends up happening is you will get sort of like a cool solution, but then it just ends up getting gobbled up. And that's the difference here is this is just an open source thing that anybody can build. Anybody can take what, you know, it's on GitHub right now. Like you want to go build a standalone ticket site and start dabbling in this a little bit and making a little bit more feature rich. You can, you know, so I don't know. I think it's like all these things that everyone in this space is working on now. Like there is actually hope because, you're able to do things where the rules actually have changed a bit enough that you can probably you can see how you could break away from these old ways and move into something new.
Yeah. And maybe I'm being too idealistic, naive, optimistic, if you will, but I think like the onboarding. So I wish Ticketbot dropped a week before it did, not to put pressure.
Cause sorry, Marty.
we're throwing a live event in Nashville, Matt and I, Rabbit Hole Recap, in collaboration with PubKey. And I don't know if we could get the venue on board. I'm pretty sure Thomas, particularly from PubKey, could convince the venue to get on board. But you can see it. Like that would have been like for the beauty of Noster too. It's like we're a podcast. We know that Fountain is implementing Noster capabilities, and with Ticketbot, since it's interoperable, Noster is, and we could literally go into the boost for Rabbit Hole Recap, and anybody that's boosting via their MPub, we could create a list of the top 100 boosters of Rabbit Hole Recap and send them out the opportunity to buy a ticket to our live show.
Yep.
In Nashville.
Yeah.
And like that. I mean, we will definitely do this in the future. Not thinking too.
Yeah, next time.
next time maybe we do something with business on air. We're gonna do. We should do a comedy show at PubKey and test this out. Like TJ Miller is really close with Thomas and those guys. I know they've been doing comedy shows. Like we get TJ.
I just went to an open mic there on a couple of days ago. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, they're getting Noster and like the ease of onboard. The hardest part of the onboarding for the venues will be setting up a Lightning address, I imagine. It's very easy to create a private public key pair on Noster, yeah. But then like figuring out how to create a Lightning address and add it to your profile is probably the biggest hurdle.
In New York, that's a huge hurdle.
Yeah.
It's a massive hurdle.
Yeah. And like if you can get over that, the biggest hurdle, which is like figuring out how to incorporate Lightning, you can easily see this for Bitcoin forward companies like PubKey being implemented. And now the apps like Primal are making it very easy to onboard via their integration with Strike. And it's weird to even say, because I've been talking bad about the everything apps, the Alipay, the WeChats of the world, but you can literally build like the everything app that actually preserves your sovereignty, your autonomy and your control over your money within the app.
Yeah, because those apps are just tapping into things. They're not centralizing it all in one spot. It's just connecting to these things. That's the cool thing. I mean, I'm most interested to see how that plays out because you can connect everything to everything. It's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out and who does what and who experiments with what. And is there going to be the like ultimate Swiss Army knife app that just has all your shit in it? Or is that going to be annoying for people? You know, I don't know. But it's definitely, I mean, that's what we're working on with the mobile app, hopefully, just to at least be able to onboard to Nostr and to Bitcoin in one swoop, you know, just make it simple. It's going to have to be if we're going to expect any normal people to use it.
Yeah. Matt and I, we did a rabbit hole recap right before this. And we were talking about particularly the HRF bounties for Chaumi Mints and Nostr clients, and they were paid out. They were released. The bounties were announced 18 months ago. They were paid out last couple of weeks. And Matt told a story of how he was reflecting with Alex Gladstein, how quickly everything's progressed over the last 18 months. Like going back from like what Damus was 18 months ago, that was the predominant client. And it was very clunky. And the only like use case was these Twitter like social media apps, and now seeing like you guys releasing Ticketbot, integrating Nostr sign in and everything else that's happening, Blossom, Prism, all these things coming to market within the last 18 months, not even 2 years. It's crazy to think what can happen if you fast forward and push this into the future. And it seems like a lot more developers are getting to open their eyes to this as well.
Yeah. It's really exciting. I think at the same time, you know, the biggest challenge right now is that, you know, a lot of these applications we're building both for Bitcoin and Nostr, everything is sort of on par with what like, I guess a typical, let's say American consumer can use today. Which I don't think is enough. I think like these things that we're building, these tools that we're building, need to be better, need to have a significant advantage over what people are using today, whether that's, you know, just frictionless payments or whether it's being able to, you know, speak freely or connect with whoever you want without any sort of anyone deciding who you can and can't talk to. Whether it's, you know, being able to find music without, you know, a centralized algorithm telling you what you should be listening to. I mean, all these things, I think we were able to improve on with these tools that we have. I'm just hoping we can keep pushing these products and experiences in a way that makes them just a better alternative to what people are already using today. Cause that, I mean, that's, to me, that's the adoption sort of, I don't know, the way to promote more adoption of all of this is just, it's gotta be, you know, way better for people.
I think it's the identity thing is what's gonna, it's what, you know, being able to take your identity and own your identity and take that anywhere is really what's gonna turn heads when that starts happening. At least when I'm explaining it to people, that seems to be the thing that perks up their ears the most. You know, when you're, especially if you're talking to anybody that creates anything or has ever built up an audience and been burned by a social media platform. You know, I have a lot of friends that are journalists that were heavy on Twitter, and that was their spot. You know, like they built up a huge following there, just like someone might build up on YouTube or influencers on Instagram or TikTok or whatever. And then, you know, ultimately, you know, that's a bad idea. You know, if history is going to repeat itself, and at some point in time, that thing is going to monetize and you're going to have to start feeding an algorithm in a very specific way. And you're going to lose all the power that you had on that thing. You know, hopefully this wave can keep going. So people have enough time to see the potential of building up an audience. But again, it's going to take action. People are going to have to, people have to stick through it. I mean, it's tough. It's tough to go through my, feed on Nostr sometimes and just see people trying. I mean, I have other projects and stuff too that I post on there, and it's like the engagement's tough. It is growing. It seems like, you know, slowly, at least the stats, I mean, the information seems to be up and down a bit there, but at least the screenshots people are posting last week show that it's growing somewhat, though it's incredibly small, you know? So, it is such a powerful thing, especially just its connection with Bitcoin and Lightning. For us, it seems like a no-brainer, but obviously, you know, luckily everyone's building so fast, but going to have to maintain that too. Cause you did see a slowdown in development. Cause I mean, development, the first part of last year, it was just like exploding. It went from nothing to everything in a couple days, it felt like, you know, and then a lot of those projects just end up getting abandoned. But, it is cool to see that people like Will and with Domus Primal and Highlighter and all these things are starting to really blossom and become full-fledged apps that people can use and around the world, and that they'll work for them. And just, I think once they start integrating some of these other things too, it's really going to be cool. You know, that's going to be something that's going to be a head turner for people as well, when they can interact with their music, or they can buy a ticket, or they can do one of these other things. Maybe it's not, I mean, I'm hoping it's not done in an annoying way, but it would still be cool if you could just buy a ticket on the note, on a note, you know, directly within a client, without it having to be like a full-fledged ticket service in it. I think that'll be the cool part of the interoperability between the features.
I mean, going back to what you were describing earlier with the Chami events, Michael, like, it seems like that would be possible if you could just have a button on a note and you were a mint that issued X amount of tokens representing X amount of tickets, and you just, whoever pays the invoice, the claim, the first token, you dock that out. It seems like a simple accounting thing. It's possible. Yeah,
definitely possible. Yeah. I think that's like the real unlock. I think, you know, there's these sort of use case specific applications that are being built on Nostr right now, like whether it's social or in our case music, or like Highlighter, I think is a really interesting application as well. But I think it's once all those things start linking and sort of playing off of each other, like Sam was saying, once you have that portable identity and then you have sort of this plethora of ways that you can use that identity to interact with everyone on the internet and interact with all these services, and, you know, like, you know, something we've thought about is like seeing your music feed like in a regular Nostr client, or seeing social feeds in a music client. I mean, that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg, but you can see how that could be really powerful. I don't know if it opens up like that all-in-one app world, or if it's even something better than that, something that, you know, we're kind of not imagining fully just yet.
Yeah. I'm sensing, are we in a trough of disillusionment with Nostr?
I'm in a place right now where I think it still has a ton of potential. I think it still has a lot of potential. And I think, yeah, maybe like generally speaking, we are kind of in a trough where development is tapered off a little bit. There isn't that like fever dream hype, you know, mentality that's surrounding it. But it seems like all the fundamental pieces are in place, and it's just a matter of like grinding away, polishing, and like really honing in the user experience around it for it to be able to do what we think it can do.
I think that's what it is for me, is just knowing how much potential it does have. It's going to be so disappointing if it doesn't maintain some, you know, catch some steam somewhere and start working. Because it really, I mean, for us, it may seem like we were sort of jumping pretty heavily into Noster, you know, right out of the gate. Because I mean, we launched in January of 23, and that was just, we had nothing to do with Noster. And then within a month, it was like, okay, I think we have to start thinking about this. Because, and the main reason for that is because it enabled so many of these things that we thought we weren't going to be able to get to for years. Like, you know, the idea of being able to do a ticket or have, I mean, even the mobile app, we weren't going to do a mobile app, really. That wasn't really, at least not now. But it just started making so much sense that we were just thinking about the social potential, like future social elements of this. And then it's like, oh man, we can make this app, and then we can make the app social, and then we can sell tickets, and we can do live streaming, and we can implement merch, and all this stuff just works together. This is exactly what we were dreaming of, and it's here right now. So I think it's mostly just like, you know, being cautiously optimistic is a good term I like using a lot in my life, where you don't want to jinx it. Like, you know, you have a good thing, but you also are a realist, you know, that it's going to take time, and it's going to take action. It's going to take adoption, and people are going to have to, if anything's going to change, people got to believe in it. I mean, it's like Bitcoin's been going for how long now, you know, and it's like, luckily there are enough people to just weather the storms over the years to get us to where we are today. And it's going to take, I mean, if we're going to change the internet, like, cause I don't really think of Noster as a Swiss Army knife thing. I just think of it as like how the internet was supposed to be. Like, you're supposed to be able to interact with things exactly how someone would describe the future of Noster. So it just seems like such a no-brainer, but people have short attention spans. That's the problem, you know? So.
Yeah, they do until they don't have the luxury to have short attention spans. I mean, that's something I've talked about behind the scenes with people working on Noster. That's Matt and I have talked about this behind the scenes. I think he'd be comfortable with me disclosing the contents of the conversation, which is, it's going to be similar to Bitcoin in the sense that it comes in waves, where you have events that happen in TradFi social media that force people over to Noster. I would argue even like you have like a use case like better ticket sales and distribution, more fair, that comes to market, and who knows, you get one artist, one comedian, somebody to actually
totally
into it, and it brings people to it, these events. Yeah. And I mean, that's what I've learned with Bitcoin specifically over the last 11 years. It's just like keeping your head down and working during the bear markets. And not that Noster has bear markets from a price perspective, but from a attention and hype perspective, there's going to be those troughs where it's just like, keep your head down and keep fucking building.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to say, like, I think that's just why we're committed to these kinds of experiments and products like TicketBot and the mobile app, is that, like, I think someone's going to hit a killer application at one point, and maybe it's already out there and it just hasn't been honed in yet. But what I like about that for Noster is there's a sort of, I think, product network effect for Noster, where if one of those applications does take off, then it makes every single other Noster application that much more valuable to people, because you have an installed user base then that is bought in to this portable identity. And now, you know, you look around and, oh, look, there's 10 other applications that do other interesting things that I can do with this same identity. I think that's why it's important that, you know, we keep pushing, and, you know, that it's the reason why I love seeing other developers continuing to push on things that they can do in this ecosystem, is that, you know, it's, I don't know, I think it's only a matter of time till someone hits on something really kind of magical and unlocks all that potential.
It very easily could be us. I mean, it's like music, you know, we spent the first part of the show talking about how powerful music is. And I was talking to someone earlier today, and I reference this all the time, but these social media or social media, traditional streaming platforms have tiers, and, you know, even having 1 million monthly listeners on a traditional platform is really not that impressive. That's pretty like middle of the road artist. And if one of those artists comes over and even brings 10,000 monthly listeners with them, because someone like us, we built an easy way for them to do that. That's, I mean, right now what we have, like 13,000 daily users on Nostr or something, like overnight that could double just from one artist, you know, and then that effect that you just described is now happening. And then those 10,000 people tell their friends, and that, you know, over the course of the next several weeks starts to grow and compound. And then now it's a news story, and some other artists hear about it and people start jumping on. And then someone with 10 million monthly listeners comes over and brings 100,000 people or something, you know. Just, it's going to be, that's why we just have to keep building the foundations. What we always tell people, we're kind of playing the slow game, which some people don't like to hear, but we have to build that solid foundation. We have to make sure it's really easy for that to actually happen when it clicks for somebody, you know?
Yeah. We need two rappers in a battle to say, hey, we're going to decide this meritocratically via zaps. There's a 10 sat zap limit, and you have to have, it's 1-to-1 MPUB. And the winner is going to be the one who has the most sats at the end of the day. Meritocratic. We're not going to let the YouTube influencers dictate who wins this battle.
That'd be so incredible. Someday, yeah. Someday.
No, but it is. It is daunting, but it's also fun to think about those problems. It's like you described.
It's so fun. Yeah. So fun. Yeah. I don't think there's any way we would be doing this if it wasn't fun. The idea of being able to even have a microscopic role in potentially changing the way things are is mind blowing. You know, it's like, how lucky are we to even be talking about this right now, that these are even options.
Yeah. And with all this in mind, like, what are some of the things that you see working within Nostr that maybe are being a little bit overlooked, or things that people should be leaning into? Whether that's NIPs, particular use cases, outside of social media, like what do you think is being overlooked or things that need to be explored more in depth?
I mean, I brought up Highlighter earlier. I think that's a really interesting application of Nostr that I don't think has been fully exploited yet. I think, and you know, not for a lack of work and development on it, but I think, I don't know. I just don't see as many applications of that particular feature being used much, so as much as I would expect.
Anybody who's unfamiliar of Highlighter, what it is, how would you describe it?
Highlighter, as I understand it, is essentially a way to like tag or bookmark something that you find interesting on the internet. It can be anywhere. It can be a blog post. It can be a link to, you know, a site. It can be like a particular line or paragraph of an article. And it essentially is an event that describes that particular piece of content and allows you to share it to anyone on Nostr. And then people can, you know, zap you for it if they like it too. And it can, you know, gain visibility that way. But yeah, I think like, and I'm sure other people have thought about this, but, you know, like text highlighting is one thing. But, you know, what I'd really love to see, I mean, if I had more time, I would build it. But, you know, like highlighting podcast excerpts or YouTube video excerpts. I think podcasts are probably the best use case because podcasting is open. So, you know, if I wanted to highlight, like, you know, the 2-minute story about Marty buying a scalp ticket from someone back in the day and share that out, like, you could pretty easily do that in a highlight, in a Nostr highlight, and just clip out the 2 minutes of the podcast where you were talking about that. And then, And then I think a client could easily be able to show that to a user and share it to everyone. That's just like, you know, one example, but yeah, it seems like a great way for people to be able to share content.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's...
What was the one... Women like this social media.
Pinterest.
Like Pinterest.
It's similar to Pinterest, yeah.
Yes.
And then the clip thing, like Fountain, you can do... Fountain has a really cool clipping service, and it's like, you know, they're dabbling in some Nostra stuff. And so I think, you know, you probably will see something like that. I think you even can use Highlighter for podcasts too. I don't know to what extent, but I think that's, I think the biggest problem right now is just the thing, at least my opinion of it is just these developers, everyone's so busy, you know, we're so busy with what we're doing. Everyone's so busy working on their own thing. And there are so many options, and there's, it's, you know, when you have open source stuff and you have all these nips and you just want everybody to kind of unify on something, I think that's probably where one detriment is just, it's everyone has their own opinion on how things should be, and it can be tough to unify some of that stuff. The same goes for what's happening in RSS too. It just, you know, it takes a long time to get everybody on the same page with a particular idea. But I would like to see more social clients just implementing basic stuff, you know, like our embed. I don't understand why every single Nostra client doesn't have our Wavelake embed in their feed. It's like such a basic thing that you would want, you know. I don't know. It just would be cool to see that. There's lots of stuff like that, you know, but I understand. Yeah, like on Primal
and a note. And
yeah, like on Primal on the desktop, if you're looking at a note with a Wavelake link in it, you see this like fully embeddable player that you can zap immediately on the note. You can add it to your, maybe you can't add it to your library yet, but you could
soon. Yeah, we want soon, that.
You could easily, but there's like only one other client really using it. I think Coracle does it, and then Primal desktop does it. I don't know why it doesn't work on the mobile, but. You know, something like that, or being even just this, someone, I think it was in Japan, asked me about the library and if it was open, and I was like, oh yeah, it's right here, just go have at it. And they were working on, a couple days later, like sent a note, and they had a full music player happening. It's like you click on something and then a music player popped up in the bottom as you're just scrolling through your feed, and it just starts playing. It's like, it's so easy to do stuff like that, to just add these additional features. So yeah, I think, but you know, that's just going to take more resources. I mean, so many of these developers are spread thin with their workload and then financially. So it's cool to see things like OpenSats funding projects and, you know, keeping food in the mouths of these developers. Cause it's tough out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Just having you walk through all this is like, and it, again, it's open source project. So based off what you both just said, it's like, is there like a spreading too thin problem that Nostra hasn't? Is it even a problem? Is it just the product of working on in-nation protocol?
Yeah, it's a symptom of just having all the options. It's like, if you have all the options, that's how it started. It was like this explosion where everything has to be a nip and everyone has to do everything just because you can. I mean, that's something I used to say to my wife all the time. She'd be like, you should do this. You know, you're really good at that. I'm just like, just because I can doesn't mean I should, you know, there's, I can cure, you have to like curate your life, you know, like to optimize it for you. And I think that's one trend I'm starting to see, which I think is ultimately great. You know, starting to see developers be like, okay guys, let's cool it with the nips here. Let's start to get on the same page with some of this stuff. Cause it's just will be impossible at a certain point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there. You can feel it. It is magical. Buying the ticket was magical. I was like, oh, I have my ticket.
It's so fragile. That's the hesitation. It's like, cause it is there and you just want to be like, I have it. Don't screw it up. Like, it's here. It is here. We have to like be very careful with this. You know, like we're walking it like a like a plate through like a, I don't know. You just have to, just got to keep going.
I don't know. I think for you guys, particularly at Wave Lake, I think the, at least from my arm's length observation of what's going on in the ticketing industry, in the music industry, comedy, like I think people, the artists, the comedians, or comedians, artists, lumping them in together, are getting to the point where, I mean, again, going back to that Shane Gillis, I know he was genuinely pissed off that like his fans couldn't get access to his tickets at a reasonable price. And he just had to throw his hands up, be like, sorry, there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
And I mean, on that point, we do have a live event. Let's talk about the positives. We sold some tickets. Ticketbot works. I've got my ticket.
All right.
We're gonna
looking forward to it, man.
We're gonna be congregating in Nashville.
I think our events seamlessly roll into each other.
Yes. We end at 7 and you guys are start
at 7. Yeah, both on the 25th, right? So I mean, if you're in Nashville on July 25th, you get your whole day planned. You know, you pop into industry day, you walk around, you shake some hands, and then you go see Marty. Then you pop over and you see our show. Can we shill our show for a second?
Yes, please do. Ainsley Costello.
Joe Martin, Ainsley Costello, Just Loud, The High or Low. And yeah, go RSVP on the Wave Lake app if you don't have it yet. We didn't have a Wave Lake app last time we were on this show, I don't think, right? So go to app.wavelake.com and download that thing and RSVP for the show.
It's very easy. It's going to be a great night. It's going to be a great day leading up to the conference. It's going to be so
fun. Yeah. Dude. I'm excited. Very excited for the change of pace.
Yeah, and we should have copies of the Bitcoin record at that event too for people to buy if they're interested.
Well, the other thing, I mean, Wave Lake Radio, I have been playing around with that. That is a cool user experience as well, being able to curate.
Hopefully you weren't playing around with it yesterday. It was broken.
What happened? Was not playing around with it yesterday.
It like fully stopped working. Yeah. It's working now. That's good.
Yeah.
We made some changes, broke a few things, you know.
I mean, you have like a live chat and you have people competing to get their songs in the playlist at the top. That's one thing that's like the experimenting with these interactions, these incentive systems. That's the stage we're in, and it's been incredible to watch how you guys have been developing it and really not being afraid to experiment with different things. Like, I think for Ticketbot particularly, that could be like, imagine if I was able to like that Dice, instead of going to Dice, I was able to just go into Primal. Like,
yeah.
Plug into Ticketbot.
That's exactly the hope. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of these ideas floating around. Tickets for a while, merch for a while, you know, other things as well. But that Nashville party just gave us a really good excuse to get off our butts and build a ticketing system.
I wish we launched it a week earlier because we would have had two back-to-back Ticketbot events.
That would have been really cool.
Yeah.
Well, definitely next time.
Yeah. All right. We started with it. We're going long here. Best concert you've ever been to? Best live show?
Oh,
I mean, I'm going back to that Weezer show in 96. That was like life altering. I was in the front. I was being, you know, like held together by bodies, just sort of, you know what that's like when you're just not even, at some point in time you look down and you're not even standing on the floor anymore. There. You're just bouncing. I mean, Weezer's gone a bit off the rails lately, I would say, but that album is one of my favorite records of all time. So to be able to see that tour was really cool.
Yeah, I think mine would have to be David Bowie. I saw him.
You got to see Bowie.
Yeah, I saw him on, what was the album? I think it was the Hours tour. That was the most, I don't know. I mean, Bowie is kind of like an alien from outer space. And that performance, I've never seen anyone carry a room like that in my life. It was like hypnotic the way he performed.
Awesome.
I got to put my money on David Bowie.
Yeah. And he hasn't said a word. What about you, Marty? Well, before we get to me, he hasn't said a word, but I'm curious, since we're asking around, Logan, what was your favorite live show of all time? What is your favorite?
I've been to very few.
Oh, God damn it.
Probably the one time I went to ACL, it was the only time I was like right in the front of something.
And what was it?
I don't even remember the name.
Even remember.
It was one of the first people at the beginning of the day.
One time I accidentally fumbled into a concert. That was the best one.
So many. It's hard for me. That Kendrick one was really good. I've seen Red Hot Chili Peppers like 4 times. They've always been really good. Nostalgic reasons. I saw Guns N' Roses, Fat Axel, probably 7 years ago. And they crushed it. I think it was the best concert because I went in with the lowest of expectations. They absolutely crushed it. They played The Secret awesome. By The Who during their encore. Played all the hits. Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia, I think 7 years ago.
Nice. I bet that was cool. I bet that was quite the show.
Yeah.
I mean, Slash, was that with Slash? Yeah, if it's Slash, yeah. Axel.
Like yeah, it wasn't Buckethead. It wasn't like Buckethead, Guns N' Roses, Slash. Was
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Duff was
real,
there.
Real Guns N' Roses.
Oh, yeah. Duff McKagan was there.
Yeah.
Was, close enough. Yeah.
Who else? And many others. I'll go with Guns N' Roses. Gentlemen, thank you for this. And this one, we started. It took us in many different directions, but I'm happy with where it went.
This is fun. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having us on again,
thanks
Marty.
For having us.
Really appreciate it. As always, the support is very appreciated.
No, I think what you guys are doing is incredible, important, and I think it's going to work in the end. I think you guys are on something.
We're going to get there. We're going to get there. We're going to push through. Whatever it takes, we're getting there.
Yeah. All right. Let's blow it up in Nashville in July. Yeah, I'm going to be there.
See y'all in Nashville.
Sounds great.
It's going to be so fun. Big party. Let's do it up.
Peace and love, freaks. Okay.